It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning. Well, last night was the season finale for Top Shot Season 1. Of course, I was one of the contestants on Top Shot Season 1, the original cast, original group. So I'm going to talk a bit about that. So if you have not seen the season finale yet, stop listening and pull up the archives of this show after you've seen that show. It is on History Channel. They're replaying it all the time. Now, for starters, when I left, I was eliminated on episode 3 of 10. We ended up doing a face-off, myself and Brad, both on the red team. We got down to the very last apple that we were shooting at 40 yards with a crossbow. And just as I was about to take my first shot, Brad nailed his at 40 yards. And it was over. Time for me to go home. A good neck-and-neck challenge. At one point in time, I was ahead, then Brad pulled even, and then Brad pulled ahead, and then I was starting to pull back again. So it was a very neck-and-neck challenge. And really, the season finale came down to exactly the same thing. When I did my exit interview, they asked me my predictions on Top Shot. And my predictions were this. I told them, I said, I definitely believe it will be an all-around, well-rounded shooter that's going to win this whole thing, because that's what it's going to take, is somebody that is all-around, well-adapted. And my predictions are either Chris or Adam. Chris ended up in the finale, and Adam made it to, I think, the episode just before that, one of the last ones on there. The interesting thing is both on the blue team. Now, I knew Ian was a relatively well-rounded shooter, but I wasn't sure to what extent. Ian was one of these guys, quiet professional, didn't really speak a whole bunch about his background and things, certainly not to the other team, and I was on the other team. They were all on the blue team, these guys. So, really, the well-rounded shooters on the teams, on the red team, were myself, Frank was a well-rounded shooter. Mike Seeklander, to a point, was pretty well-rounded. He's a big pistol guy, but pretty well-rounded from having been in the Marine Corps and experienced other guns. Pete, fairly well-rounded shooter, actually, but not much experience when it comes to the pistol. I don't know if there was much when it came to the submachine gun. They didn't have a submachine gun on the show, but just as kind of a well-rounded thing. The specialists in our group, or the people that were not quite as well-rounded, Kelly was a long-range rifle shooter, but I mean, that kid, he really picked up the pace. He really showed everybody how things were going. Denny was, pretty much a single-action handgun kind of a guy, had done some semi-auto years before. Andre, whose real experience was only with military stuff, essentially the M16. And then you had, Brad, who was a U.S. PSA Grandmaster or an IPSC Grandmaster. I forget which of the disciplines, but a really big pistol guy. As a matter of fact, highly centered around the Glock. So anyhow, when we come back from the break, we're going to go through kind of the well-rounded shooters and the specialists on the blue team, and then how everything went down on the season finale. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, and we're right here on 2A Radio.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
And welcome back. You know, it's funny, as I'm sitting here speaking about Top Shot Season 1, all 16 contestants, we all keep in touch and have been keeping in touch for several weeks on an email, kind of an email group of sorts. And I, sometime during the last segment as we're speaking, Adam Benson off the blue team was sending something out about kind of an informal Top Shot Season 1 first reunion of sorts, where we all get together sometime and hang out and sit around the campfire and shoot a whole lot more guns and a whole lot more rounds than what we did on the show, because in fact there wasn't much in the way of it. Earlier today, Brad Ingman off of my team, off the red team, sent out an email with his thoughts about the whole deal. So we're going to get back and talk about kind of the shooting backgrounds of a lot of the folks. We hit the red team in the last segment, and the blue team, the well-rounded shooters. So on the red team, really, the well-rounded shooters that you had, really, you know, we've done a lot with well-rounded shooting, were myself, to a certain extent as well, Mike Seeklander, to a lesser extent than me, but still well-rounded, was Frank. And then, you know, from there, it kind of deviates off. Pete a little bit as well. When it goes to the blue team, you had well-rounded shooters in the way of Adam, who's, I mean, as much as Adam shoots, he's well-rounded all over the place. Chris, who's professionally well-rounded. Ian, who is professionally and more of an amateur as well, well-rounded. You had Tara, also professionally and on her own, amateurly, well-rounded. Caleb, who was mainly pistol shooter. You had JJ, who's mainly pistol shooter. As a matter of fact, almost entirely a pistol shooter. Blake, who is also fairly well-rounded, but his mainstay on the world stage when it comes to competition is pistols. And then you had Jim, and Jim was the first of the blue team members who was eliminated, but Jim was a specialist in World War I, World War II era long-range open-sighted rifle shooting. So you had a lot more well-rounded shooters on the blue team. As a matter of fact, you had more well-rounded shooters on the blue team with more experience being well-rounded shooters. So that's it came down to blue team members, the last four guys that were there, one guy from the red team, three guys from the blue team, two guys from the blue team ended up in the finale. It was Ian against Chris. And it got down to precisely the very last shot with the very last gun. That's what it got down to. And it would have been pretty exciting. It got all the way down. They started with throwing knives. They went to the longbow. Let's see. Then from there, they did something with the Winchester 1873 shooting at a rope. Then they went to the Beretta shooting at the little piece of glass, the little tube in the glass in the tube. Then it went to the AR-15, and then I believe from there it went to the M1A, or the M14 as they called it. Truly an M1A, M14 is select fire, but anyhow, not splitting those hairs too finely. Then with the last gun, with the M14, the M1A, they shot one target at 100 yards, it blew up, and then they had a target at 300 yards. So now, with an open-sighted rifle, you either have to adjust the sights, or you have to plan on bullet drop, because it's taking longer to fly, so the bullets are dropping. Sir Isaac Newton proved that regardless of the object that you've got, everything falls at virtually the same rate. He did that with a couple of lead balls off the top of the Leaning Tower of Pisa. He had one ball that was about, let's say it was 5 pounds, another one that was about 15 pounds, dropped them at the same time, and they hit the ground at virtually the same instant. Very, very, scientifically there was a difference. In actuality, there was not. Now, bullets will drop at essentially the same rate. Given the design of the bullet, the twist rate, the elevation, the humidity, the temperature, the angle, not really the angle, no. Everything's gonna drop at the same rate. It is. Everything will start being sucked by gravity at the same rate. Obviously, if you elevate the barrel, the bullet's going to be traveling away from gravity, but it's still being sucked down by gravity. Then you actually have the centrifugal force of the bullet. As it spins, and most bullets spin clockwise at about 20,000, or 200,000, pardon me, revolutions per minute. It's a very fast spin. it will tend to spin up and away, such as about a 1 or 2 o'clock position from the bore. All of this is very predictable. All of it can be accounted for, which is why you have long-range bench rest shooters, you have snipers, precision long gun guys that are all able to take all of this into account and manage all of what I've just been describing. Anyhow, they needed to do a little bit of this. It's sometimes referred to as Kentucky windage and Tennessee elevation when you're not able to adjust your sights for a particular target. So it got down to where Chris fired his rounds, hit the 100-yard target. When he was getting ready to shoot the 300-yard target, he had to, in the midst of that, pause, reload the magazine a bit, put the magazine back in, and then continue shooting. Ian, on the other hand, had loaded several more rounds in his magazine, as it looks on TV. It didn't look like Ian stopped to reload. It looked like he loaded maybe 8 or 10 rounds into his magazine. It looked like Chris loaded maybe 3 or 4. Now, I don't know that that's what happened. I wasn't there. And the camera editing, the editing of this show is highly creative when it comes to really showing what actually happened in reality as opposed to the alternate reality that History Channel wants to portray for a little more drama, a little more viewership. I was certainly a victim of that in episode 3 when there was so much friction between Kelly and I, and they edited out that I even said goodbye to the kid or had any other, good or jovial times with him after an incident where I was highly offended by an extreme insult to one of my family members. So that was just really out of line. But anyhow, with all that being said, the editing is certainly creative at times, to say the least. But when it got down to it, the very final round, Ian, British-born, former British Army captain, and now U.S. citizen, and he is a home builder. He's managing a construction company, as I understand. He won, and he won the title of Top Shot and the $100,000 prize. And quite honestly, the title of Top Shot for Season 1, the very original group of contestants, the very original season, and really when History Channel, Pilgrim Films and Television, who's actually the producers behind it, they also do American Chopper, they do The Ultimate Fighter, they also do, Dirty Jobs with Mike Rowe. Pilgrim is involved in a lot of stuff. It was their first time involved in this particular show and a shooting-based reality show. Now, Craig Piligian, the owner of Pilgrim Films and Television, used to be partners with the guy that does, and I forget his name, I'm sorry, but I forget his name. Craig and the guy that has the reality show that everything else is drummed up by, they're really measured to, is Survivor. And Craig and the guy that has Survivor now, they started Survivor, and after 2 or 3 seasons, they had a business relationship breakup. The other guy ended up with Survivor. Craig went on and started doing many other things, like what I just mentioned, that are all very well known. Of course, Colby Donaldson came from Survivor Season 2. He also did a couple of special seasons. So he's actually done 3 different seasons of Survivor because he was so popular. I have offered, as a matter of fact, just last week, our producer at the History Channel, the main guy that's in charge of the show, doesn't get any higher than this, a guy by the name of Paul Cabana, very upstanding guy, good guy. Paul sent out an email with some updates. A day or two later, I got back to him, and I offered, if they had any interest, to forward off to Colby Donaldson, the host, an invitation by me to come out and do a good couple of days worth of training, real life, hard gun shooting, getting some stuff dialed in when it comes to the operation of a lot of the different types of guns that they're using on Top Shot. They can even let me know what it is that they're using, take me out to California, and I'll show Colby a bunch of stuff, and it would be neat to see Colby actually fire some shots. They do the really slow-mo camera. They'll take the experts that are actually in the field that are doing the demo shots. It would be neat to occasionally see Colby do a couple of these things, see him a little bit more comfortable in his shoes as the host. So that went out, I think, maybe even Friday. I haven't heard back yet, but we'll see what happens with that. It may happen, it may not. Anyhow, the season finale is done. Ian has won. He is Top Shot from Season 1, which is really, it's not a surprise and it's not a stretch. Ian's been in the shooting sports for a long time. He has made a lot of improvised weapons. He's shot a lot of his own guns, his own home-built guns. He's competed. He's won. He's very competitive. He's got everything really dialed in his sights, in his mind. He is a true competitor and very well done. And it was a pleasure to have been on the show. We're going to talk a little bit more about some of the behind-the-scenes stuff after the break, so stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, and you're listening right here to 2A Radio. If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check, which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
Welcome back, and we are discussing last night's season finale of Top Shot Season 1. I was contested on the red team. I was eliminated on episode 3 and came home. A lot of people have asked me, do you know who won? Do you know who won? Do you know who won? All I could tell them was, I can't say a thing. Just so you know, I didn't know who won. Anybody who was eliminated and not at the finale didn't know. Even though we all have confidentiality, signed contracts, and all this other great stuff, it probably would have been within the provisions of the contract for somebody who was at the finale to tell me who won. Quite honestly, I didn't want to know because I would have stopped watching the show. I wouldn't have watched it. And it actually got to the point I was so intrigued in watching it, I hated sitting through the commercials. So what I did was I would record it. I would have it on my DVR. And it comes on at 7 o'clock my time on History Channel. So at about 7:30, I would get on the TV and I would start it. Because it's still recording, but I could watch it as it was recording. I'd start from the top. So by the time the end of the show came through, I could actually fast forward through all of the commercials and just actually watch the 45 minutes of the show without hitting the commercials. And you know, I would watch when the replays would come on. I'd watch them. Of course, I'd catch all the commercials in, but just so the advertisers weren't getting slighted by yours truly. And quite honestly, I'm one of those people who actually pays attention to the advertisers of programs that I appreciate and that I enjoy, both on television and on radio. If there is a program or a host or something that goes on that I enjoy, I actually do pay attention to the commercials. Because if they're going to advertise on something that I enjoy, that I appreciate, and that I support, I will take my money to them if that's the sort of industry or business or product that I need to buy. That's just the way it works with me. I actually am heads up about it, and I understand how advertising works. Anyhow, let's talk a little bit about some of the insight. I have to tell you, an email came through this morning I got when I woke up from Brad Ingman, who is also on the West Coast. And he put on there, you know, really, the most memorable things were all the behind-the-scenes stuff, having 16 really type-A personalities that they threw together. And Brad called it, you know, 16 of the most affable and high-integrity people that they could come up with and put them together in a home. And you're absolutely right. It'll be interesting to see how this goes in future episodes. The original episode of Survivor Survivor 1 ran differently than all the rest, because by the time Season 2 came around, everybody that was a contestant on Season 2 had seen Season 1 and started, oh, planning and scheming, and oh, I could do, oh, yeah, just think if they had done this, this underhanded trickery, or whatever, or you know, get together on this sort of thing. And a little bit of that happened on Top Shot from people who had seen things like Survivor and other television programs, other reality shows. So a little bit of that went on behind the scenes. You could see some of the guys, like the whole thing in episode 5 between Adam and Caleb, and Adam and Chris and some other guys were talking about trying to pit a couple of their other guys together, namely Blake and JJ, and, you know, things like that to, you know, really try to plan out and strategize and eliminate some of the better guys so that the guys who might not otherwise be there, they wouldn't have to worry about it, blah, blah, blah. So a little bit of that happened. Now that Top Shot is in the bag, Top Shot Season 1 is in the bag, and casting for Top Shot 2 is underway. As a matter of fact, to have your entries in, the deadline was 4 days ago, just a couple of days before the season finale. Top Shot 2, they're in the process of casting that now. They're getting all the information, all the stuff's in, they're sending out the background requests and, you know, additional information. It'll be interesting to see how it goes, because I wonder if they'll have people that have the same integrity. Really, you ended up at the very end with four guys sitting around, the final four sitting around, constantly together, eating together, sharing, conversation and hanging out in the morning and everything. And, the same thing after that next evening, where you had the final two hanging out, playing cards together, conversing, everything was together. It wasn't, they weren't planning against each other, friends to the end. And quite honestly, everybody who was on the show was a friend. I probably became closer with Andre on the red team than anybody else. But Andre and I had, for some reason or other, we had some sort of a connection, connection between a family, a little bit of experience, just... It was really cool, the connection that he and I shared. I also really enjoyed Pete. Man, Pete is awesome. Anybody who doesn't like Pete is somebody who doesn't like anybody in the human race. Everybody loves Pete, and there's a reason for that, because Pete is in, there's a single word that sums up Pete, and it is awesome. Pete's just an awesome guy. And I hope I never lose contact with Pete. Just a great guy. Blake, another guy that I really enjoyed. JJ, always got a smile on his face, always in for a joke, laughing, great upstanding guy. Adam, Chris, everybody. Tara was a wonderful lady. Denny and his really nice cowboy ways. You know, there's just Brad, even though a couple of the guys didn't like Brad's whining, I just saw that's Brad's personality. I spoke about it on shows in the past, and Brad's just a great guy. Frank, always jovial. Mike Sieglander, professional as the day is long, and just a lot of respect for that guy. Certainly seeing Kelly perform to a level beyond where he said his expertise was really great. There's just been a lot of neat experiences that were there, and I really enjoyed it. Anyhow, stay tuned, guys. We're going to move on. We're going to get to some things out of Pennsylvania after the break.
You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Somebody get a silencer for this guy. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
All right, guys, welcome back. You know, there is something that is very constant in the universe. And that is bullheadedness, really, just absolute bullheadedness when it comes to people who are somewhat fanatical. I am fanatical when it comes to gun rights, if anybody hasn't noticed over the history of 2A Radio. I am fanatical about it. There are other people who are fanatical on the other side, against guns and against gun rights, and don't really understand. And that's the thing, is I understand rights. And I understand guns. Thrown together, I understand gun rights. The people who don't understand them simply don't get it. And it's either a level of ignorance because they just don't want to know, or it's just plain stupidity and they don't have the capacity to learn. I'm going to read something that comes out of the state of Pennsylvania. Now, Pennsylvania was one of the original 13 colonies. They have incredibly staunch pro-gun laws and provisions in their state constitution. However, since 1776, Pennsylvania has become very liberal in a lot of population centers. And they try to subvert the rights of gun-owning America in those large urban areas in Pennsylvania. And it stinks. They totally have forgotten their history. They're, oh, well, you know, times are new. We need to, the laws need to change with the times. Okay. That's not so. More laws and more laws and more laws only create more and more and more criminals out of people who are otherwise law-abiding. So I'm going to read this opinion piece that comes out of Pennsylvania. And it's titled, Plenty of Room for Reasonable Gun Laws. All right. So let's listen to this. I will comment as we go. Opponents of common sense laws to prevent gun violence, most notably the National Rifle Association, claim the court's recent ruling in McDonald versus Chicago gives them the right to carry guns anywhere, any place, all the time. But that isn't what the Supreme Court actually said in its decision. So that's the opening statement. Now, you're talking about preventing gun violence. In order to prevent gun violence, the good, honorable people, the honest, law-abiding, need to be carrying guns, because then the criminals will leave them alone. And all violence will go down, not just gun violence. And if you're talking about, if you take a case where some crackheaded, messed up on drugs, violence-tended individual decides to attack someone, a man, woman, whatever, say he attacks a woman on the street, and she's carrying a gun. And as he is beating the hell out of her, trying to rob her and inevitably rape her, she pulls out a gun and shoots this guy. The anti-gunners call that gun violence. It's violence that was perpetrated by a criminal, but by the honest law-abiding intended victim, they ended up stopping it with a gun, stopping the violence. But since there was a gun involved in the violence, they call that gun violence. It's not fair. It doesn't really meet the definition, but that's what they do. And in fact, what the Supreme Court did was they incorporated Heller in the McDonald decision. So you have to read both in order to get it. And if you read Justice Scalia's opinion in Heller, he does say open carry within this country is legal. It's in Heller. You have to read deeper. You have to read the entire McDonald decision and then realize Heller's incorporated and read that entire decision. You have to read the Slaughterhouse decision and realize that that thing's been overturned. Continuing, the court sent the Chicago handgun ban back to the lower courts and extended the Second Amendment to apply to the states and local laws, not unexpected developments. However, the court also said reasonable regulations of firearms are permitted under our Constitution. They always have been and they always will be. Okay, that is absolutely not true. That is absolutely not true. Always have been. Now, really, when regulations started coming in with guns was when you started getting the Wild West and people shooting up Dodge City and they said, look, no guns in town. And that was, you know, 60, 70 years after the country really had founded the Constitution. So that's what we're talking about is not always, but there have been, but it took a long time for them to get there. He said, so continuing, the author says, so what does the court's ruling really mean for Pennsylvania? He said, Ceasefire PA believes that reasonable regulations on firearms are necessary to help police get illegal guns out of the hands, out of criminal hands, and better protect Pennsylvanians. We also believe these common sense regulations fall squarely under the Supreme Court's decision and are permissible under the federal and Pennsylvania constitutions. Now, Ceasefire Pennsylvania. Ceasefire means stop shooting, right? Ceasefire. So, they are already looking at guns specifically, not at habits of the human beings. Now, there's already laws that prevent convicted criminals of having guns. There's already laws against using guns in criminal ways. It's already there. So they're looking for reasonable regulations, as they call it, necessary to help police get illegal guns out of the hands of, out of criminal hands. In order to be a criminal, you have to be a known criminal, you have to be convicted of crime. Right? So what we're talking about now is, do you mean keeping illegal guns? And if the gun is already illegal, you don't need more regulations. Police get illegal guns out of the hands of criminals. If they're already illegal, a law's already on the books. If it's already illegal, someone's already broken the law. You don't need more laws. You see, the law's already there. So you're already contradicting yourself. And if it's out of the hands of criminals, to be known as a criminal, you have to have a conviction. Right? Or in some cases, an arrest, but generally in a, as a conviction. If you're convicted of certain crimes, you're not allowed to have guns. Any felony, domestic violence, in some states, drug-related offenses. If you already have one of these convictions, you can't have a gun anyhow. So the laws are already on the books. If you're talking about someone who is a criminal but hasn't yet been caught, or who hasn't yet shown criminal tendencies, they're just now becoming a criminal, there's no way to predict that. That's like saying having reasonable regulations to help medical people prevent people from having spontaneous bloody noses during the summertime when it's hot. You can't do that. Continuing, they say one reasonable step is a reporting requirement for lost or stolen handguns. In Pennsylvania, 45 cities and towns have already taken local action in support of lost or stolen handgun reporting, either by ordinance or by urging statewide action by the General Assembly. Okay. In two cities, Philly and Pittsburgh, courts have repeatedly upheld local lost or stolen gun reporting laws, rejecting the gun lobby's challenge five times. This coalition of municipalities taking action to reduce gun violence is supported by more than 190 mayors, which is Mayors Against Illegal Guns, 400 faith leaders, and thousands of citizens from Allentown to Aliquippa and a host of towns in between. Now, let me address this. To report a gun that's been lost or stolen does not reduce gun violence, and it doesn't keep guns out of the hands of criminals. It doesn't. Okay, hey, my gun is lost. My gun was stolen. How does that, all of a sudden, reporting that, remove the gun from these people's hands? How is it? How is it that that happens? The only way it could happen is if you end up with, oh God, it's kind of a fantasy. I guess somebody, a criminal, ends up with a gun that's been lost or stolen. It hasn't been reported. The cops stop this guy with the lost or stolen gun. They run the numbers on him. Nothing comes back, so they let the guy keep the gun. Now, how often is that going to happen? If they're already a criminal, they shouldn't have a gun anyhow. They're going to take the gun off him anyways. There's really nothing behind this. Continuing. While support for lost or stolen handgun reporting laws, hundreds of Pennsylvania police chiefs have come out in favor of another reasonable reform to close a loophole in state law that allows Pennsylvania residents to sidestep law enforcement and obtain permits from Florida to carry concealed guns, even if their application were denied in Pennsylvania. This loophole lets people with criminal backgrounds get out of state permits to carry guns in Pennsylvania, even after Pennsylvania authorities determined they shouldn't be allowed to do so. Now, first of all, law enforcement works for us, not the other way around. You've seen this in California, where the police chiefs and sheriffs get together for anti-gun laws. They're doing the same thing in Pennsylvania. Here's the deal. It's your law that says that people in Pennsylvania can carry with out-of-state permits. I live in Nevada. If you want to carry concealed in Nevada and you're a resident of Nevada, you must have a Nevada permit. Most states are that way. It's hardly a loophole when part of Pennsylvania's permitting process is this. A local police chief who gets the application can look at it. They can run a background. And some of the cops can say, oh, yeah, I've had a couple of run-ins with this guy. And, you know, because I've had a couple of run-ins with him, he likes to speed through town a little bit, you know, just make a stop sign into a yield sign. And he's kind of an a-hole when I stop him and talk to him about it. They'll deny your permit. You don't have to be convicted of anything. If they think that you run around in the wrong crowds, or they think that you don't respect them as law enforcement, not police, the overseeing umbrella effect of law enforcement where we suppress society, not police where we help them, not police where we're there to support, but law enforcement where we're there to suppress, they'll deny you a permit, which is totally selective and not right by any means. Continuing to say, if your handgun is lost or stolen, report it to the police. I want to move on from that. You guys are really kicking a dead horse. Let's see. We believe these are exactly the kind of reasonable solutions to prevent gun violence the Supreme Court had in mind when Justice Alito, writing for the majority, held that our Bill of Rights limits, but by no means eliminates, municipalities' ability to devise solutions to social problems that suit local needs and values. Okay. You're really making a stretch with this one. Really making a stretch. Because to prevent gun violence, you need to prevent people from being violent in their minds. Not guns. A gun is a tool. Calling to chime in on this, we have a caller from New Brunswick. This is Werner on line one. Werner, welcome to 2A Radio.
Yeah, thanks for taking me on there. I want to bring another aspect to this. It's not just only guns that are dangerous and deadly. How about all the technology that has been around for the last 50 years, like directional energy devices in the line of lasers or masers? They can be at times more deadly than a gun. And the law enforcement doesn't seem to have caught up to that technology of the last half century.
Now, and, you know, cell phones kill a whole lot of people because people are on them texting or calling or messaging or something. When they lose control, their car causes an accident and someone gets injured or killed. But we're not passing legislation on lost or stolen cell phones. Lost and stolen cars are already there, but still they get used the same way. It's just, it's total hypocrisy.
No, the point I want to make is where criminals are using that technology instead of guns to get their way.
And I understand that. And you're absolutely right. But the reason people are on guns is why? Because it is the easy thing to go after. It's an inanimate object that we can actually go after that people don't see as something that is a necessity in everyday life. Some of these other technologies they point to and say, oh, well, lasers, there's medical uses for lasers, or there's, you know, certain reasons for certain technologies. And just for the people to, the few people who actually use them for nefarious reasons, we're going to overlook that. It's the same thing with guns, however. Guns are necessary. Guns are used for good. But it's when the nefarious characters get their hands on them is when all of the headlines are made and people go after the guns because the guns, they believe, are evil.
Well, as I say, what you said, it's not the gun that's evil, it's the evil use of the gun.
It is. It's really in the minds of the people. You could take the gun out, you could insert a bat, you could insert a knife, you could insert a vehicle if they're really ticked off, you could insert brass knuckles, a switch, it really doesn't matter. If it's violence in the mind, it's violence on the street. It is not the fault of the gun, it is the fault of the violent people. And until violence can be removed from humankind, you're always going to have it. You're always going to have victims, and you're always going to have criminals that are making people into victims.
Just for your information, you look up your records. You know, the recorded shows from 4th of July 2009.
Yes.
You will see some photos pictured there, posted there, that show the harm that can be done, what I was talking about, directional energy beam.
Werner, thanks a bunch for the call. We're headed into break, guys. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Place for all reason, I can't end up to mine.
The American Dream, founded by men of honor, men of a creed once shared by most, and now all but forgotten. Men who risked their lives and perpetrated the most egregious acts of treason in history to create the United States of America. The Founding Fathers recognized that tyranny reigns over unarmed men, and they vowed to never allow that to happen here in the United States of America. Politicians of a lesser ilk have tried to subvert the right to self-protection, to protect your family and property. Until now, announcing America's Victory Shoots, the largest patriotic shooting event in generations, celebrating the Supreme Court's decision in McDonald versus Chicago, restoring the rights of all Americans across the land, from sea to shining sea, right in the backyard of Chicago itself. America's Victory Shoot is for Americans who share the creed of our founding fathers. Join your countrymen in a celebratory weekend of shooting events and training for the protection of you and your family at the patriotic event of a generation. There's limited space, so go to victoryshoot.org to find out more and sign up today. As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back up, I'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong, and this is not where you belong.
And welcome back. Now, continuing on with this article from these guys that are, they're trying to profess that reasonable gun regulation is good, but they're not outright saying they're anti-gun. Until you read this, one of the hidden things that anti-gunners are using now is this. They say gun violence is a serious public health problem in Pennsylvania and across the nation. They're trying to use gun violence as a public health issue. That's what they're trying to do. Not that eating too many double whoppers with cheese is a health issue. I mean, cigarettes kill far more people than guns. Too many fast food joints and eating too much of that food kills far more people than guns. You know, talking or texting on a cell phone while driving kills far more people than guns. But they're calling it a serious public health problem. What's going to happen is now under Obamacare, which you're going to end up with down the road somewhere. We don't know if it'll be 3 years, 10 years, whatever. It will be where they say, owning a gun shows, our studies, our government studies show that people who have guns in the home are this more likely, whatever it is, to be injured or killed, to be injured. They're going to say injured. Someone in the home injured due to having a gun in there. It's going to be their own studies, not backed up by any real fact. It's going to be selectively done like the rest of the government studies are. Nothing's independent. Nothing is truthful. And they're going to say if you have a gun, your new insurance premiums are going to be X amount, which would be 50 times more than what your normal premium would be. And they're going to charge you more because their study shows that your chances of being injured or somebody in your home being injured by having a gun is so much higher. The public health argument by anti-gunners is gaining traction, and we need to see it. Every time they say it, we need to understand that is code for stealing your guns. That's like progressive is code for socialist. Damn nears on that of a commie. You're total pinko, almost red. They're really going after the guns in this way of a medical form of these, what people would normally see as, oh wow, yeah, I can really understand these words that you're using. It's like several years ago they changed, somebody on the left came up with changing the term from illegal alien or illegal immigrant to undocumented worker. It really helps the heart bleed for them, doesn't it? Same thing with this public health excuse when it comes to being an anti-gun zealot. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, We will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2aradio.com. I will not.